I'm Hal Young.
And I'm Melanie.
And we have six sons. And they all survived to adulthood. Woo!
Yes. Okay. Yes. And so did we. Yeah, we have six boys in a row, and they're all adults now. And two girls, they're still at home. And we have found you really can teach boys to love reading and writing, but it's not always easy. Because, you know, why do so many boys hate reading and writing? Thank you, dear. Could y'all please pass those out for me? I love you.
Yep. Okay. All right, why do boys hate reading? You know what? Legitimately, it's hard for a lot of them.
It is, and it's harder than it ought to be. Because for boys, the range of what's normal developmentally is a lot wider than it is for girls. And so a lot of boys are dealing with developmental issues a lot longer than their sisters are. Now, and so it's harder than it ought to be.
A lot of times when we teach reading, we're not teaching it in a very boy-friendly manner either.
No. And even if we were, they would rather be running and jumping and climbing and building forts, right?
Right. You know, a lot of boys really lack academic confidence. I mean, it's something, we're going to talk about this in some detail later on, but you know, it's just true that an awful lot of boys at the time when they should be picking up and running forward are kind of lagging back because they just don't have the guts to do it.
Especially after middle school, when everybody hits a big bump, and we're going to be talking about that after lunch today, when our boys hit that big bump and they've been struggling all along, they're like, oh, I'm no good. Academics aren't for me. And they don't even try.
And, you know, a thing about boys, they're like their dads. They're practically minded. They want to know, what's the point of this? Why are you doing this to me? Why are you expecting this of me? Why should I care?
Also, like their dads, they do not like not knowing where they're going and what's happening. They don't like not knowing what to do. Have you ever seen a man stop and ask for directions? Ever?
This has saved our manhood, right? You say, Siri, where am I? Okay, yeah. You don't have to ask anymore.
And it doesn't punch your man card.
Right.
But so a lot of our boys don't know what to do when it comes to writing, and that terrifies them. They don't like it. They don't like not knowing what to do. But, you know, you really can help boys learn to love reading and writing. We're going to talk about how.
All right, let's start with this idea of boy-friendly instruction. What does that look like? Okay, you know, you need to recognize something. Mom, your son's not like you. In a lot of ways, he's not like you, and he does not learn the same way that his sister likes to learn.
Even the boys that seem just like you. Because I have a couple of sons that are like, you stamped me again. And we have so much similar personalities, we're like on each other all the time, but they still learn differently than I do. They still think differently than I do. And, you know, for example, environment. Girls prefer a warm, soft, nurturing environment, softly lit. And do you know what happens if you put boys in a warm, softly lit environment?
Yeah, you have to keep waking them up. Okay, you got to think of your son like you think about your dog. He wants the window down, his head out, his tongue flapping in the breeze, the wind blowing past his ears. That boys like it brightly lit, they like it cool, and they like the environment to be engaging.
Full of energy.
Okay.
They want you to be excited, and that's really hard when it's the fifth time you've taught multiplication, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they need you to say, hey, come here, look at this, it's cool. Mm-hmm. This is going to be so interesting in your life. You're going to use this. They need you to be excited. They need a high energy environment. They also, you know, moms hate stress and competition. You know, have you ever seen those parachute games where there's no winner, you just lift the parachute and come down? A woman invited that.
Nobody told me how to score that.
No, you don't.
Well, how do I know when I've won?
Nobody wins. We all win. Okay, guys don't think that way, folks.
No.
Nope, 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 nope. And so have you ever noticed that boys get a soggy collar sometimes in their lives? They chew on their T-shirt collars, and their pencils are disgusting. They have teeth marks on them,
uh-huh.
and they chew their tongues, yep. Which looks really gross. Why do they do that? Well, you know, when women face stressful, painful experiences, we shut down and we turn inward, and we often don't even remember what it feels like later. That's how we have more than one child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, when guys get under stress, we tend to zero in. We concentrate better, okay? That's why, you know, that gets us what we need to do to pull our family out of the burning wreckage beside the road, to drag ourselves to the aid station when we've taken a bullet on the battlefield, or, you know, to do all these kind of stressful things that we guys have to do.
And they naturally seek that out when they're trying to concentrate. They chew on their cheeks, they chew on their tongues, they chew on their T-shirts. They may find it easier to do their schoolwork standing up. Like Thomas Jefferson.
Okay, we went to visit Monticello, okay, Thomas Jefferson's mansion, and there was a reproduction of a desk that he had designed for himself. Interesting desk. It was really tall, and there was no chair. Because, see, what Thomas Jefferson realized was when he was doing concentrated, creative, philosophical work, he could focus better if he was standing on his feet and he could shift his weight around, right back and forth on his feet, whatever. You know, in the elite boys' schools in Britain back in the 1800s, they didn't have any benches. They had no chairs. The boys stood up all day.
Now, I'm not telling you to make your school painful for your boys, okay? It's painful enough. But we can use those same ideas, like using their big muscle groups. So many times a mom will say, oh, you know what? My son just, he poops out about 10 a.m. and can't focus. And I say, what do you do? She says, I tell him, we have just 5 subjects left, honey. Focus.
How's that working for you, ma'am?
It's not. Okay, instead, get him up moving around, running up and down the stairs, doing push-ups. I had one child that would read 10 words and then jump 100 times on the mini trampoline. Then read 10 words and jump 100 times. Boys actually think better when they've used their big muscle groups.
You know what? That goes for men, too. Okay, I'm trained as an engineer, and when I had a really difficult calculation to do, I found sometimes it was better if I stood up and I put it on the whiteboard in my office, and I'm using big muscle groups, okay? I had a son that went to college, and he's taking engineering, and in his calculus courses, he found the same thing. He went to Walmart, and he bought all these little white boards like you put inside your locker, and he would do his calculus homework with markers on whiteboards for the same reason.
You can do the same thing. You can go to Lowe's, get a piece of melamine for $20 or $30, 4x8. Put a piece of trim at the top and the bottom. You've got a giant whiteboard they can do their schoolwork on. Now, you may be thinking, well, how do I keep a record? First of all, no one's ever going to ask to see their fourth grade homework. I'm sorry. Never. Okay, never.
But if that's your style, wow, these things have cameras on them. So they do their work up on the board. You take a picture, click, you put the file name so that you can remember it later or forget it later, whatever. But you've got a record of it, and they've been using their big muscle groups.
Now, sometimes moms are frustrated by the fact that their boys seem to ask pointed questions and want to argue. And well, what about that? How do you know that? And how do I know that's true? That's how boys learn. They wrestle with topics. They want to debate it. They like that excitement of wrestling it through. He's not contradicting you. He's trying to get you to engage the material with him. Mm-hmm. All right? And even in drawing and seeing the world, boys see the world differently. If you ask a little girl, like a preschooler, to draw a picture, what does she draw? A flower, house, a person. She draws nouns, persons, places, and things. Now, have you ever seen a preschool boy draw a picture and you had no idea what it is? Do not guess. Instead, you say, tell me about your picture, honey.
Oh, this is so cool, Mom. You see, there's a rift in the space-time continuum, and aliens are invading through this gap in the time field, and the Air Force has scrambled F-15s, and they've gone up there, and they're firing missiles, but see, the heat rays are picking out the aircraft, and boom, and the pilots are they're jumping out in their parachutes. So pilots are okay, but it's so cool.
He's drawing verbs.
Lots of verbs.
Older people sit down and ask, what is it? But the boy asks, what can I do with it? All right.
Let's talk a little bit about academic readiness.
We'll talk about older boys in just a minute, okay?
Okay. In the early years, you know what? You want to focus on getting them outside to see the world, to feel the world, to smell, touch, taste, whatever. They need to experience the world around them.
And you need to explain the world. Get off Spotify. Stop chatting with your friends when you're driving to the post office. Just even driving to the post office, you can talk about so many different things. You can talk about anthrax. You can talk about Pony Express and the Overland Mail. You can talk about how books of the Bible were once letters. There's so many things you can talk about that you know just because you're an adult in this world. And you can pass that knowledge on to your boys, which is going to create excitement about learning. To find out the world is a much more fascinating place than it appears to be. That building is about much more than just a bunch of boxes with locks. right?
You know what? You can work together.
Oh, boys, this is so
really
important.
They really love to come out and they work. They'll work with mom, they'll work with dad, whatever. Are they underfoot? Yeah. Do they slow you down? Yeah. Do you have to keep showing them how to do things and interrupt? Yeah. But you know what? They're learning all the time. And it means so much to them to be spending that time with you.
And chores are a fantastic early academic activity, seriously. Like sweeping back and forth is a crossing the midline exercise. It's a reading readiness exercise. Maria Montessori found that out when she found that she was in charge of the daycares in Rome. And she found that the kids going from the daycare to the school were not as well prepared to learn as the kids who'd been home with their mothers. Well, what were they missing? They were missing the chores. They were missing the sweeping, the polishing the silver, the cutting sandwiches into triangles. They were missing all these early learning activities that come from working alongside their mom and dad.
You know what? This is a great time to read aloud. If you've ever learned a foreign language, don't you recognize that you could understand when people were speaking to you a whole lot sooner than you could conjugate verbs and make a sentence back? Okay? English language development is the same way. And your child, your boy, can understand a whole lot bigger vocabulary and grammar that he's able to use himself reliably. So read aloud to him. And you know what? It doesn't have to be the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, okay? It can be Make Way for Ducklings. It can be Caps for Sale. It can be Blueberries for Sal.
Yes. Now, this is also the time to disciple. You know, Martin Luther said, give me a child until he's seven and anyone can have him after that. Mm-hmm. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but still, this is the time, the early years are when you lay the foundation for the character that they'll have as adults.
Okay, now look, that's all well and good. But see, these people are really anxious to get into the book fair and start buying curriculum. So when can we start doing like real school?
First of all this is real school and don't believe anything else. And in fact, there's a huge problem in the schools because they're moving reading instruction down to kindergarten. And the vast majority of children are not developmentally ready to learn to read in kindergarten. And the problem with that is they feel like academic failures. And that sticks with them. These early learning activities are the best way. Research shows, and we'll talk about this. I don't know if we're doing that session this weekend. We did it in Round Rock. But early research shows that kids that go to a play-based preschool or kindergarten, by the time they get to high school, are far ahead of those that were in an academic-based preschool and kindergarten. Because academics at this age takes the place of things that are more important for them to learn. Now, that sounds kind of shocking. You're thinking, oh, she's one of those loosey-goosey unschoolers. Y'all, all six of our boys have gone to college with academic scholarships. One of them studied abroad at Oxford University. We are academic fanatics, but now is not the time. Okay?
Right.
The early years is not the time. So you watch for signs of readiness. What does that look like? Honey, we're going to study the letter A. This is a capital A. This is a little A. Mm-hmm. It usually says, we're going to look for things that start with A. Let's start with apples. We'll have apples for breakfast. If he can remember it day to day to day, he may be ready. But if he remembers it today and forgets it tomorrow, even if he remembers it again Wednesday, he is not developmentally ready. Now, listen to me. Do not make goals about things you cannot change. Mm-hmm. That is a way to despair. Okay? It does not work. You cannot change your child's developmental readiness. And if you try to teach a child who's not developmentally ready, all that will happen is you will make them hate learning and feel like a failure. Okay? And that's really hard for dads. Dads, let's go. Let's hurry. He's got to go to college. Okay? He's three, y'all.
Yeah.
All right? There's time.
Okay, now you may be saying, well, this sounds a lot more involved than it was teaching my daughter. You know, she just like went to it like a duck to water, and she's filling in the blanks so neat, and she colors within the lines, and it was so easy. Why is it so hard for my son? You know what? People say, and we heard this when we had that first boy, you know, and people say, well, boys develop more slowly than girls. No,
not
really
true.
They develop on a different timetable in a different sequence.
For example, boys develop large motor skills earlier than girls. I had an 18-month-old that could hit you in the chest with a baseball every time. You know, I have seen little boys that could build giant, complex Duplo cities because they develop spatial reasoning earlier than girls do. Now, of course, then they stomp through it and they destroy it because they're Godzilla, but that's another story.
Yeah, and see, girls develop those small motor skills that are involved in filling in the blanks and neat handwriting, that kind of thing. That developed a little later with the boys.
Yeah, the girls develop the ability to sit still. Girls develop the schoolish skills earlier than boys do. And, you know, it's not really fair that we love this part and don't love that part. You know, they're just different. The boys will get there. They're just different. So that means you need to choose boy-friendly curriculum. Now, the way to do that is to look and say, how do they show their learning? If it's a lot of writing in the early years, that's not a boy-friendly curriculum.
Now, we're not talking high school. That's a different matter. But we're talking elementary school, primary grades, things like that. If it's got a lot of handwriting, that's going to be a struggle for a lot of boys.
Ask, is it busy work or are they busy working? Mm. Another thing, if you cut back on the writing in that curriculum, how much is left? If not much, then that's not a boy-friendly curricula. Okay? Now, you can adjust curricula to limit writing. Like, remember the mom whose child hated science?
Yeah, so we had this mom came up to us at a conference. She said, you know, I just don't know what's going on here. My son hates science.
Whoa. I almost never hear that. Boys love science generally.
Yeah, my son, he hates it.
What exactly does he say he hates?
Well, he seems to hate answering the questions at the end of the chapter. That seems the thing which really gets his goat.
Okay, yeah. What about it?
Well, he doesn't like to write, and he doesn't like to fill out the, you know. See, we worked out this really neat plan, okay? I have him answer all of the questions in complete sentences with his best handwriting, and we correct his punctuation. And that way we're doing two things at one time.
I'm not surprised he hates it.
Yeah.
Why don't you just ask him the questions?
Is that cheated?
No, it's not cheating. Why do they have them write all the answers in school?
Because the teacher can't sit down and interview 24 fourth graders and ask them personally. They don't have the time.
In fact, it is more academically proper to ask the child a question where you can discuss it with him than to give him written work where he can only come up with one answer and you don't really know whether he understands it or not. Mm-hmm. The tutorial method is the best way to teach. That's why at Oxford University, they don't have classes. Mm-mm. The student meets with the professor, discusses what the topic of the week. The professor gives them reading assignments and a writing assignment, and then they go spend the rest of the week in the library. And then they come back to the professor, and they discuss it. It's kind of like homeschooling.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of curricula, especially those written for the schools, has way more written work than any child needs to do. Do you know why? To keep those precocious children busy while the teacher helps the other kids. Mm-hmm. It's busy work, and it is not necessary for learning. Now, let me tell you this. We had a flood in our house last year, and it destroyed our garage. And I had to take and throw out box after box after box of homeschool workbooks and notebooks that I had saved from our kids growing up. And I looked at that, and I thought, you know what? We had some miserable days over this work. Mm-hmm. We had days when both of us were in tears over getting these worksheets filled out correctly and all the problems answered and everything done.
I remember driving through the Pigeon River Gorge in the middle of the fall foliage, and it was so gorgeous, and I was enjoying the view from the windshield. And meanwhile, we're telling the kids, finish those math worksheets. Get your eyes down on your paper.
I kid you not.
Don't look at the beauty of God's creation. You've got math worksheets to do.
Do not drive all of you crazy to create documents no one will ever see again. Mm. No one will ever see again. If it's academically useful, if it's beneficial, do it. If it's busy work, life is too short for busy work, folks.
So if you're teaching handwriting, then have them push a pencil across the paper. If you're teaching science, don't teach handwriting at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay? Teach what you're teaching, one thing at a time.
Okay. And accommodate their developmental readiness. Just because they're not ready to read yet doesn't mean they can't learn all kinds of other things if you do it orally. Mm. And so accommodate that. Now let's talk for a minute about developmental differences, because you've seen a normal curve, like the bell curve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a few kids, tiny, tiny percent of kids who spontaneously learn to read at 2 or 3. And there's a tiny, tiny amount of kids that really are not developmentally ready to read until they're 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. The majority of kids will be developmentally ready to read when they're about 6 to 7.
But you know what? What's normal for boys is a little broader spread than it is for girls. And so, like, of our 6 sons, okay, 6 boys, same parents, same homeschool environment, same way we tried to teach all of them. And we had some that were reading chapter books when they turned 5 years old. And we have one who didn't learn to read until he was 11. And they're all intelligent, brilliant guys.
Yeah.
Even if Dad says so. But you know what? Honest to goodness, that's perfectly within the average norm, the normality for boys.
The cool thing about homeschooling is you can accommodate those differences with patience. My precocious kids that were reading chapter books at 5, what you have to be careful with those kids is don't push them too far forward, because there are developmental stops. One of my children got him going, I thought, he's going to go as far and as fast as he can in math. Well, what I didn't know is you have to go through puberty to be able to do algebra.
Literally.
You do.
It's a brain development thing. Yeah.
And so he hits that level and he thinks, I'm no good at math. He was 2 years early, okay, studying algebra. He thought, I'm no good at math.
This guy graduated with a degree in economics, okay? This is the one that went to Oxford. He took upper level calculus in college. Oh, I'm no good at math.
He still thinks he's no good at math. But that was my fault, not his. With your precocious boys who are reading early, who are doing schoolwork early, what you do instead of pushing them forward, because, y'all, nobody needs 3 years of calculus before they graduate from high school, okay? And no boy needs to go to high school when he's needs to go to college when he's 14. He's not emotionally ready.
And your 9-year-old does not need to be reading from the young adult section in the library.
Ooh, no, that's a scary place, folks.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Instead you broaden their education out. You go deeper into subjects. You learn more about science and history and art and music and literature. Mm. You broaden instead of pushing forward. Now, with your kids that are struggling, what you're going to need to do with them is find other ways to enrich their minds and to keep them going and learning. Audio books, audio textbooks, doing things orally, doing things hands-on. But you can accommodate all those differences because you have the freedom to as homeschoolers. It's really cool.
You know, if you got one who's struggling, one of your major jobs as a parent is to give that boy hope. And you need to give him some perspective. I'm a history buff. I love reading history. And I read a book that was written by a chaplain about the religious revivals that went through both armies during the last years of the Civil War. Fascinating book. One of the things he brought out was, he said, they've got all of these young soldiers in their early 20s, and they're coming off the farms, and a lot of them were still signing their paychecks with an X, okay? They were totally unbooked. And now, wow, the Lord has touched this guy's heart. He wants to read the Bible for himself. So the chaplains and the soldiers who had some schooling were teaching them how to read. You know how long it took to teach that young man, those young soldiers who had no book learning, to read the King James Version of the Bible? About 90 days. About 3 months. He went from 0 to the King James Version. Whoa! Why is that? Well, you know what? That's because they weren't dealing with a 5-year-old. They were dealing with a 24-year-old. Somebody who had a mature brain. Their brain had gone through all the developmental stages.
The older you get, the faster you learn. And so a little boy, mom came up to me at a conference. She said, I don't think my little boy's ever going to learn to read. He was beside her, y'all. And so I looked at him. I said, son, if a boy learns to read at 5, when do you think he learns to read like an adult? He said, I don't know. I said, 13. If he learns to read at 8, when do you think he learns to read like an adult? He said, I don't know. I said, about 13. And he was about 9. I said, if he learns to read when he's 11, do you know when he learns to read like an adult? He said, no, ma'am. But is it 13? I said, yes, it's 13. Because as your brain develops, as you develop an adult mind, you learn readily and more easily. And so you got to maintain hope in your boys. You've got to believe that they will get it or they won't. All right. Also, share some examples from history. Thomas Edison was sent home from school as uneducably mentally retarded, is what they told his mother. She told him, you're too smart to go to that school, and started teaching him at home.
Mm-hmm. And then one day the lights went on.
Yeah.
George Patton graduated at the bottom of his class, severely dyslexic, bottom of his class at West Point. Who else graduated from his class at West Point?
That's right. None of us know.
Yeah, but George Patton did. Certainly. He made it happen.
Agatha Christie had dysgraphia so bad that her editor had to edit with her on the phone because they couldn't tell what word she meant when she, with her spelling was so terrible. They couldn't tell what word she meant.
You know, we saw an exhibit of Leonardo da Vinci's notebooks in our museum over in Raleigh, and it was fascinating because this little tiny scribbled handwriting in his notebooks, he would go from left to right, and he'd get to the end of the line, and he'd go down, and he'd go from right to left on the next line, and he'd left to right. And so, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Okay. So when do you get help? Okay. Delays often resolve when, if they're turning 8 and mm-hmm. they're still having reversals, they're still struggling with reading, it might be time to look into getting some help. Testing, I avoided it because everybody said, don't let your child get labeled. At home, it doesn't matter. You don't have to share those test results with anybody.
You're not looking for a label. You're looking for a diagnosis that's different.
Yeah.
That is totally different. And so, you know what? We got our dyslexic son tested about this time.
Oh, yeah. And he and I had a big conflict over it because he wanted to see his scores, and everybody said don't show him. And I was kind of concerned about showing him because, y'all, some of his stuff was second and third percentile. But he looked at it and he said, am I really that smart? Because his IQ was up here. Mm-hmm. His IQ was like 99th percentile. I said, yes. He said, I don't care about the rest of it. We'll work through it.
And that's an important thing to remember. If you've got a struggling learner, so frequently they are gifted in other areas, and the fact that they are late readers has nothing to do with their intelligence, nothing to do with their potential.
But they have already diagnosed themselves as dumb, and that's the heartbreak. Sometimes, even if they're reading and writing, but it's still just so hard. I wish I'd understood this. One of mine, severely dysgraphic. I just thought he was lazy, y'all, lazy and sloppy, until he got to college. And he was struggling so much. I knew how bright he was. I said, you need to go to the disability support office and get tested, because I'd had some experience by now with a younger sibling. And they had never tested anyone more ADHD than him.
Ooh, that's homeschooling for excellence. Wow.
Yeah, never. And this was a big regional medical center, okay? And yeah. He was severely dysgraphic. I could have helped him if I'd realized that you need to look at that child's intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know how smart he is. And if it's harder than it ought to be, you might ought to intervene and get some help. And there's some easy interventions. There's brain therapy things you can do at home. There's a lot of stuff that you can do, and we'll talk about that at the very end. You can get tutors, other help, but don't let it continue to be harder than it should be based on his intelligence, okay? Now let's talk about reading and writing. Reading and the power story, and we got to go much faster because we started late, okay? All right. Fascinating study. They looked at adults in 35 nations, and they had them estimate how many books were in the home they grew up in. And then they tested their literacy, their math skills, and their technological skills. And they found some very surprising things. For example, someone with a bachelor's degree who grew up in a home with few books had the equivalent literacy of someone who was an eighth grade dropout who grew up in a home with many books. Just growing up in a home with many books is the equivalent of 8 years of formal education. Why? It's like knowledge socialization. Having books around you all over the place teaches you that learning is important, that knowledge is valuable, that it's worthwhile. It shows you how to go get knowledge yourself.
If your kids see you reading, they'll understand that reading is valuable. And you know what? These are wonderful tools. I've got books that I read on Google Books and all the rest of that. But you know what? They need to see you turning pages, because you can't tell, am I reading a blog? Am I reading the works of Shakespeare? Am I playing a multiplayer game on my phone? I mean, it all looks the same to them. So let them see you pick up a book.
Now, they can't read before they're ready, but there's no too early to read aloud. Okay, you need to be reading aloud to your kids. Hal still reads aloud to our kids, and our youngest is a teenager now.
They requested it.
And that is it's a valuable family thing that draws you together, so they all have the same stories and make the same jokes and make the same literary references. But it also teaches them how valuable reading is. And for a boy who hates reading, reading aloud exciting, wonderful stories is super motivational to learn to read yourself. And listen, one dad came up to me, and we did a session about gifted kids. A dad came up and he said, you said to let him read picture books. I have a very advanced gifted 5-year-old, and I told her, don't read those books. They're too easy. You should be reading things that challenge you. Please don't do that. Because those early books are cultural gold. They tell you things that you'll hear referred to all your life. You know, if somebody says, woo, you know, I read what the president said, but the emperor has no clothes. They need to know what that means. Okay? And you learn that from picture books. It's a cultural, valuable thing that they need. So don't push them into harder reading, because sometimes that easy reading has things they need to know. Okay?
Now, you might say, okay, that sounds great, but I've got 8 kids under the age of 10, and I don't have time to read. Okay? That's why we have audiobooks. God gave us audiobooks for a reason.
Yep.
Okay?
Listening is easier than reading, so you can listen to a more advanced book than you can read. And the advantage of this is it teaches them what the written word sounds like. It teaches them to follow a sentence through a complex sentence. It teaches them to follow a story through several complex paragraphs. And so when they actually learn to read, when their decoding catches up, they'll have huge jumps in reading comprehension.
Like, our really dyslexic son grew up listening to G.A. Hendy audiobooks, okay? Stuff was written in the 1890s, sentences this long, big vocabulary. And you know what? He didn't learn to read until he was 11. He wasn't really reading comfortably for a few years after that. But then he took off like a rocket because he had heard long sentences and big words and advanced grammar. And when he saw it on the written page, he could recognize it.
It bypasses their difficulties to engage their minds. Now, boy-friendly genres, boys love adventure. They love mystery because boys love to see the bad guys get it and the good guys be successful.
Mm-hmm. Biography's great because boys love to find a hero, somebody they can emulate, somebody they can follow. So, you know, introduce them to biographies, the classic ones, Daniel Boone and George Washington, Abraham Lincoln and Robert E. Lee, and all these people who have a proven history that they can learn from the characters of men in the past.
Good and bad. And boys, this is hard for moms to understand, boys love nonfiction because boys are very practical and they like to learn things. And so that you'll see them seek out nonfiction and science and history and things that I would consider kind of boring.
Oh, I remember the books that were the most popular in my middle school when I was growing up. It was like all these books of guides to American fighter jets and the history of the Corvette and the, you know, stuff that was nonfiction.
Jane's Fighting Ships.
Yeah, I have one son that read Jane's Fighting Ships for fun. That's cool.
Now, science fiction is something that's very appealing to boys because it marries adventure and science. The problem is that many authors of science fiction began writing science fiction because they wanted to invent a world in which God's laws did not exist. And so be careful of that. There are some good science fiction out there. Some of the old stuff, like Tom Swift. There is good stuff out there, but it is pretty rare. You need to be more careful in that genre.
Okay. You know, the boys are going to want to read shorter books at first with lots of photographs or illustrations. That's fine. Okay? And they're going to want something that's fast-paced. Either there's going to be little short paragraphs or it's going to have a story that moves along quickly. All right? Those are kind of things that will draw them into reading longer things later.
Things they're interested in, like dinosaurs. You know,
yeah.
Find what their topic is. If they're a preteen, preteens have obsessions. Every preteen's obsessed about something. Find them books in their obsessions, and they'll want to become a doctorate in that, you know?
And talk with them about what they're reading. You know, get them to tell you the story again. Tell them, hey, what did you learn about fighter jets out of that? You know, what's your favorite?
And then listen.
Yeah.
which is harder than it sounds. You know, reading helps writing. Loving reading makes you want to write. And actually, reading a lot makes you a better writer. Hal and I have written 9 books. Our editors say we are so easy to edit. Well, that's because we are both voracious readers, and we know what the written word is supposed to sound like. And so reading a lot will help make your boy a better writer.
So let's talk about writing for
a little bit. Writing is so influential. All of you will influence several dozen people in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. The people you know at church, in your community, in your family, your friends. If you say you start speaking or do like what we're doing here, we can influence hundreds or thousands of people. Mm-hmm. But if you write a book, you can influence generations that haven't even been born yet. Writing is so influential, it lasts. It's the permanent form of communication. And so how can we get our boys writing? One of the things we got to do is we got to remove obstacles.
Okay, obstacles to it are if you've mixed up the difficult task of handwriting with other topics, then they can be struggling in that regard.
So teach what you're teaching. Mm-hmm. If you're teaching, don't make them hate history or science because they're struggling with writing.
And, you know, and this is something that the English language kind of stumbles on this, okay? When we say writing, do we mean you got a pen scratching across the paper? Do we mean that you are putting words together to make sentences and paragraphs? We use the same term for that.
But it's not the same, is it? Because in writing all the books we've written, I didn't write one word of them by hand. And so we need to separate those.
Separate the handwriting from the composition, if you will.
So when you're teaching your kids composition, if they're struggling with writing, let them dictate. Mm-hmm. And this is, y'all, this can be so freeing. Our boy who was really struggling, dyslexic, dysgraphic, asked him, one day he came to me and said, "Mom, I wish I could compete in the North Carolina History Museum contest like my brothers and earn money. I want to win money like they did." I picked up the phone, I called him and said, I've got a child with a learning disability. Is it all right if he dictates his essay?" And they said, "Oh, absolutely. Just make sure he does his own research and you type whatever he says." And he won first place in the state of North Carolina. And y'all, it changed everything for him. Because he said, "You mean I really am good at this?" I said, "Yeah, you're a great writer." And that gave him the motivation to fight down the handwriting too. But now, use dictation, let him use a keyboard.
We got one son who's wildly dysgraphic, but you know what? His uncle upgraded his office equipment and passed down an old laptop to him. And he learned to do the keyboard. I still think of his typing. He learned to do the keyboarding skills. And suddenly, this kid who is like pulling teeth to get two sentences out of him.
Ninth grade, y'all. I couldn't get him to write two sentences.
And then he comes to Mom and says, "Mom, I'd like to compete in the National Novel Writing Month." Mr. Two Sentences said this. Yeah. Brethren, let me tell you.
Okay.
That boy wrote 17,000 words in that competition. It just flowed
in one month.
Out of him.
One month.
Because doing this, for somehow, it bypassed the blockage that he had making these little loopy notions.
Yeah, weird.
Okay,
have them write on a big whiteboard. One of our kids taking Mandarin Chinese in college found it was way easier to learn the characters doing them big on a whiteboard. And so have him write on a whiteboard. It also choose boy-friendly topics.
You know what? They've got things that they want to think about and talk about. Then let them write about it.
Oh, and so many topics in writing curricula are lame, especially for boys.
Well, you know, the curriculum assumes that you do not have the creativity that morning to come up with a prompt. So here's some neutral prompts, dear beloved teacher.
Boy, are they neutral. And you know what? But I used to be afraid when we started homeschooling, if I change anything, maybe they'll miss something important. Y'all, the prompts are not golden, okay? And so if you've got a boy like one of ours who loves raptors, he loved birds of prey. Instead of asking him, "What are your three favorite foods?" Oh, say, "What are your three favorite raptors?" Oh, and so choose those high interest prompts. We call this delight directed writing. What are his interests? Incorporate his obsessions and give him a reason to write.
You know, he wants to see there's a practical use to this. So like thank you notes. "Hey, you know, Grandma sent you that really nice check for your birthday. If you send her a very polite thank you note, she might think about sending you another check for another birthday." Practical. They see the connection, okay? And so, you know, an invitation to a friend to go do something and go somewhere, request for help. It's great, you know, to say, "Hey, you know, you're fascinated by this, whatever this subject is. Who's the expert in that area? Did you have a question you'd like to ask him? Write him a letter."
A business plan. One of ours, born entrepreneur, struggling learner. When he wanted to buy a business at 13, I said, "Okay, but we got to write a business plan. We got to go about this right." He was all over it. And so find out what his interests are and do that. And then,
if your child ever said to ask you, "Mama, where do books come from?" Then you could say, "Well, I saw a picture of where books come from, and it's a mess. It's terrible." Absolutely. Because this is actually the start of one of our books. Okay? What you've got to do is to help your son understand how to get his thoughts organized. I mean, not outlining. Remember outlining?
Oh.
Roman numeral 1, capital letter A, Arabic numeral 1.
Oh, look, then, I hated that so much. They tell me to write an outline. I didn't know what to do or what to say or how to do it. And then they said write a rough draft and then change it. And I'm like, why do you want me to write it twice? It was awful. And then we discovered this way of brainstorming. And it's called a content map or a content web. And it's so much more fun and so much easier than an outline. What you do is you put your main topic in the middle and you draw a circle around it. And then you just brainstorm. And you say, okay, what are your three favorite raptors? Well, I love eagles. Why do you like eagles? I like them for this reason. You write that down and connect it to eagles. Yeah. But you know, hawks are this way. So you put hawks over here. It doesn't have to be in any particular order, which really helps brainstorming. Mm-hmm. And so you just put down all your ideas and you look at it and you see, wait, this one has a bunch of connections. This one doesn't. We need to do some research. And so you go out and you find answers for the gaps, for the places that don't have many connections. Mm-hmm. And here's a hint about research. As you research things, anything you get a fact from, copy that URL and paste it into a Word document. All right, that's going to become your bibliography later. And so you find the gaps, and the organization emerges. All right, so you begin to see these points have lots of connections. Those are my major points. Now, here's a real clue. Do not do things in the ordinary order. Do not write your introduction first.
No, nope, because I tell you the truth. We started a book one time because people were asking questions about homeschooling boys. So we started to write a book about homeschooling boys. And as we worked on it, we realized, you know, a lot of the problem they're having is because they just don't understand parenting their boys. It's not just the instruction. It's not the education. It's the parenting relationship. And we ended up with a different book than we started out to write.
If we'd written the introduction first, it would have been an introduction to somebody else's book. Yeah. Okay? And so instead, you write your content first, then your conclusion, then your introduction once you know what you're going to say. And so instead of writing an introduction to homeschooling boys, we wrote our book, Raising Real Men. Okay? And so that's how it works. The content has to come first. Now, how do you do your brainstorming? Pursue your curiosity. Run down the rabbit trails. Look it all up. Because, again, you might end up with something different than you originally planned. And then you take all those URLs, the website addresses that you pasted in your Word document, and you paste them one by one into one of the many bibliography generators online, like EasyBib. And it will help you make a bibliography. And it'll tell you what you're missing. It'll go out there and it'll pick up everything it can. Then it'll say, oh, you need an author. And so you go back and you see if you can find out who wrote that article. And it's a very easy way to make a bibliography. And if you do that with your kids, if you always cut and paste what you're looking at when you find a thing and you write down what you learned there, just a phrase. Maybe I learned what eagles eat. Just put what eagles eat. Then your kids will find it very natural to write an annotated bibliography. And they're going to be so happy about that when they get to college.
I don't know. Okay. Now, you know what? Guys really feel insecure if they don't know what's going to come next. And so we need to talk to them about a procedure, a cookbook, a recipe for creating a longer piece of information. Okay? And so... You know, this is not the way that you do the finest creative writing, but it's a way to get off the blank page. It's a way to get words down so that you can do something with it. And then when they build their confidence, they can learn to do a little more creative variations.
To vary it. Who was the guy who said about sweating blood?
Oh, yeah. James Michener, great novelist. He said, writing is easy. You just put a sheet of paper in the typewriter, and you stare at it until big drops of blood form on your head. Okay? This is not a guy that, you know, Hemingway was the same way. Legitimately, sometimes the creative act of writing is intimidating. I don't know.
Okay, so let's teach the pattern. Okay, the basic nonfiction paragraph.
Okay.
Okay, first they're going to have an introductory sentence. You can take a picture of this, okay? The introductory sentence captures the attention. Then they're going to have a point one sentence with evidence, a point two sentence with evidence, a point three sentence with evidence, then a conclusion sentence that summarizes and drives it home. Now, what is evidence? It's anything that makes you make that point. Facts, opinions, anecdotes, research, any reason why. It's just evidence means your justification for making that point. It can be because I think they're really beautiful. Okay?
That's fine.
Now this is super critical because this is what everyone's looking at when they're assessing your child's writing. Do they include evidence? All right, so
let's go to the next step. Let's talk about a three-paragraph essay. I don't know what it is. Three-paragraph essay, okay? Now, in this case, you write an introductory paragraph, okay? Same purpose, though. You want to capture the reader's attention and invite him to keep reading afterwards.
Then your content paragraph will have a sentence, a point one sentence with a couple of sentences of evidence, point two sentence, etc. So you're going to have several sentences for each point, and the concluding paragraph summarizes and drives it home. Now, the basic nonfiction three-paragraph essay then becomes the classic five-paragraph essay. And this,
hello, high school. Here we are.
This is what you write for the SAT. This is what you write in college. This is it. And it becomes so easy if you teach this pattern.
See,
if
you already learned the pattern, right? Introduction, point, 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 conclusion. Easy,
and,
right?
And each paragraph mirrors the style of the basic nonfiction paragraph. So your point one paragraph will have an introduction to point one, then it'll explain, then it'll give the evidence for point one and a conclusion for point one. And so each paragraph mirrors the style, and your bibliography comes from your initial research. And if you just copy and paste those URLs, your bibliography is easy. Do not ever fail to do that, okay? Now, so making writing easy. Participate in the brainstorming with them. Get excited about it. Chase down what you're interested in. Follow your interest. Make it exciting, okay?
Take dictation. Help them to get their words out of their head and down into print somehow.
Now, you type what they say, okay, and then print it out. And then have them read it aloud. Because you will find so much, it's so easy to find your grammatical mistakes when you read aloud. Like, Hal has recorded the audiobooks for our books. And even after they've gone through numerous professional editing and publishing, when he records audiobook, he always finds things he says, that doesn't sound right. Because we know how it's supposed to sound. And when you read your writing out loud, he'll say, whoa, that doesn't sound right, does it, Mama? No, it doesn't. What do you want to change? And you put his changes in. That's the editing process. Then you print out the final copy, and you give it an audience. Boys need purpose. So that means that... Well, you want to share Mike Flesco a little bit?
Sure.
All right. Okay. So you give an audience. He reads it aloud to his dad or to his siblings. He folds it up, puts an envelope, mails it to his grandmother. She'll be thrilled. Sends it to a relative, whatever. Give it an audience. Now, right. So let's break it down. Separate writing and handwriting. Use boy-friendly topics and organization and teach the procedure. Once he becomes good at the procedure, he'll be able to vary it and produce excellent writing. But right now, what you want to do is get him writing. And giving him the procedure, do you see how if you've done all that brainstorming and you can clearly see your points, that slotting them in to the recipe becomes so easy? Here's your point, and there are your subpoints attached under it. So it's so worth it.
So our son, who was so profoundly dyslexic, finally... praise God, started reading, and he was determined he was going to catch up. So he's reading, even though it's a lot of work for him, and he's so excited about this new skill in his life that he goes to his buddies on his football team, and he's asking his friends, hey, what are you reading? And they're all saying, well, I don't like to read that much. I mean, reading's boring. I don't like, you know. I mean, he got no joy out of it. He came home, and he told Melanie, he said, Mama, they make me so mad. It's easy for them, and they don't appreciate it.
You know, we have to preserve our boys' academic confidence because boys go through their academic growth spurt in high school. I had a child that at 14, I'm thinking, Father, help me to teach him enough to fill an application at McDonald's. At 17, he was reading ancient philosophers for fun. At 19, he was in college on a full-ride academic scholarship. Last year, he graduated with a double major in university honors and has a great career, making twice what we do. And so... you've got to preserve the academic confidence, or when he gets to high school, he won't try. And so that's why you've got to teach using methods that will preserve his love of learning, preserve his academic confidence, and help him to prepare for the future. You know, God made us to communicate. God made us to write. He gave us his word in written form. He made us to read. He said, study to show yourselves approved unto God, a workman that needs not be ashamed.
Rightly dividing the word
of truth. He made us to read and write and communicate. He will make you able to do this. He'll make your child able to do this. I want to invite you to come by our booth. We're in booth 513. It's kind of in the middle of the book fair, but you'll recognize it because you'll see our boat bristling with rubber band machine guns. That's us. Okay, and swords. And we have a book called Raising Real Men, Surviving Teaching and Appreciating Boys. And that has a lot of this kind of information and lots more about parenting boys. I think it'd be a blessing to you. And it's available in hard copy and an audio book. You can find us at RaisingRealMen.com. You can find us everywhere on social media at Raising Real Men.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you about an audiobook, History, Heroes, Long Sentences, and Complex Grammar. Hero Tales from American History was written by Theodore Roosevelt in 1895 with his friend Henry Cabot Lodge. They wanted to teach character lessons using American biography and stories from American history. So it's a bunch of short stories, 8 to 10 minutes long. And we started reading it as a family read aloud and said, wow, this would make a great audiobook. We started recording the audiobook and said, whoa, some sound effects would really be cool. Because history is so much cooler with screaming French mobs and cannon fire and stuff. So okay. So it's in there. Okay, so that's at our booth.
This is one of the books in our character building audiobook library. Mm-hmm. These are all solid, good character building books, high interest for boys and for girls. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to get good audiobooks in your home. Mm-hmm. Also, we carry all of Diane Craft's materials for struggling learners. These are the materials that our son, who struggled so much, said they changed his life. If you want to talk about those, come by our booth. I'll talk to you about them. We have a subscription box that teaches artisanal craft skills using real tools in absolutely complete kits. No trips to the store. If they need a pencil, it's in there and it's sharp. And so come check this out. It's a great resource for boys. And I've got a freebie for you for lasting so long since we started late.
Okay, here's a freebie. If you're thinking, all right, I need some good ideas for books for my young boys and middle schoolers and ever so much, this is a downloadable freebie on our website. Just go to RaisingRealMen.com/readingpack. I'll say that for the recording. And you can download list of picture books and list of young adult books and list of books that our family wore out because we loved them so much.
So go to RaisingRealMen.com/readingpack. Some of your podcast listeners, check out our podcast at HelenMelanie.com/radio. And may the Lord give you the patience and the creativity to teach your boys to love reading and writing so that they may read and love the Word of God.
Amen.
Thank you.